This is Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Washington's legislative session starts January 9th, and that means state lawmakers have less than a week to maneuver for their priorities. For Democrats, those include building more housing, adding gun control measures, and exploring alternatives to prosecution for drug possession. It's high-stakes stuff, and there is no one I'd rather talk to about this than Austin Jenkins. He's a staff writer for Pluribus News and host of Inside Olympia on TVW. He was also a longtime reporter, folks will know, listeners of KUOW will know, covering state government here at KUOW. It's so good to talk with you again, Austin.
Great to talk with you, Libby. Thanks for having me on.
Let's talk about the makeup of the legislature really quickly. In Olympia, Democrats have kept their majority in both the Senate and the House. Are there any changes that you're watching in how these parties will govern?
Well, you're right. You know, what hasn't changed is the Democrats are still in control of both chambers. They have the governor's office. It's the proverbial trifecta. But here's the thing. This is a very activist legislature. A lot of new members have joined in recent years. More are coming in this year. There are more younger lawmakers bringing new ideas and perhaps less patience for the old way of doing things, where you sort of backbench it for a while to learn the process, see how the place works. As Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins, told me recently, her members are coming to Olympia to do stuff. And speaking of coming to Olympia, 2023 will be the first year since COVID hit that the legislative session should be back to normal, whatever normal is these days. But what I mean is lobbyists filling the hallways and rotunda, the public coming to Olympia to testify in person rather than via Zoom, although I understand that remote testimony is an option here to stay. But, you know, I just think that this is finally a test of what we used to think of as a more normal in-person session.
You spoke with Governor Inslee in December about his budget. What are your major takeaways from his proposed spending plan?
Well, this is the last budget that Inslee will enact, presuming he doesn't run for an unprecedented fourth term. And when I asked him about his plans, he didn't say one way or another, but I think the expectation is this is his last term. So you could view this as something of a legacy budget for him. And I will say that despite concerns about a potential recession or downturn in the economy, state revenues are still quite healthy. And the governor is proposing a significant increase in spending. This is a $70 billion two-year budget proposal, representing, again, another double-digit percentage increase in state spending. But the governor is casting this budget, even with that level of increase, as a post-pandemic budget that he says won't address all of the state's pent-up needs. To that end, his budget theme is a renewed focus on pressing needs, and that includes housing and homelessness, behavioral health, climate change, salmon protection, public safety. So it's a robust budget. It's definitely a Democratic budget, but the governor would say it's also a constrained budget.
I found your discussion with Inslee on taxes to be especially interesting. You asked him about efforts in Minnesota, for example, to provide more targeted tax relief for individuals. What did Inslee have to say about that? Is that something that we might see in Washington state?
Well, nationally, it's really interesting to see what states, including Democratic-led states, have been doing in terms of tax relief, much of it aimed at easing the pain from inflation and higher energy prices. California right now is wrapping up a nearly $10 billion inflation relief payment program that involved direct deposits into people's bank accounts and the issuance of debit cards. Maine, where energy prices have just skyrocketed, is poised to start sending out $450 rebate checks to residents. The Democratic governor of Connecticut has proposed, or at least floated, the idea of tax cuts for people making up to $200,000 a year, definitely the middle class, right? And I could keep going with examples like that. Here in Washington, though, the governor and legislative Democrats have not embraced the idea of across-the-board tax cuts or rebates, or really the idea of trying to cut taxes for the middle class. In fact, the most high-profile thing they've done was enact a capital gains tax aimed at high-income earners. They've been all about trying to make the tax system, they would say, more fair and more balanced. You know, Democrats will make the argument it's harder to do across the board cuts in a non-income tax state like Washington. But this is also philosophical. They really believe in targeting tax relief to those they think need it the most. So that would be small businesses, low-income families. They've rejected the idea of gas tax holidays or big property tax exemptions. Heading into 2023, I see more of the same, very targeted tax relief. One thing to watch for, though, is whether Democrats embrace a Republican proposal to expand the income eligibility for the new working families tax credit. That's one issue where there seems to be a lot of bipartisan interest and support, both in implementing that policy and now potentially expanding it to more families.
Let's start with housing and homelessness. Governor Inslee has been pushing housing as a top priority for the state for a few years. The housing shortage and people experiencing homelessness are, of course, not new issues in Washington state. How does the approach in this budget from the governor compare to how lawmakers have previously tried to address the housing crisis?
For this year, the governor's come up with a new idea, and it's actually an old idea that's been done in previous eras in Washington, but not recently. And that is his proposal for a $4 billion bond measure to build a bunch of new low-income housing units. And for context, $4 billion is nearly double what the current budget is spending to address the state's homelessness crisis. What I would observe about this is that it has felt for a long time like the state's response to the crisis hasn't been at the scale that the crisis demands. Mm. With this proposal, that may be changing.
So how is the bonding measure supposed to work?
So the governor is proposing a statewide voter referendum that would allow the state to raise this $4 billion over the next 6 years by issuing bonds, and this is key, outside of Washington's debt limit. That's why it would need voter approval. This proposal does not come with a funding mechanism. So the governor is not asking voters to authorize a way to pay for this, but instead to allow the state to borrow beyond its debt limit. So that's the concept here is a bond measure, you get the money up front and you start building the housing units with it and you add it to the state's debt limit.
Hmm. And voters have to say that's okay because it's beyond what the state is authorized to borrow. We're talking about adding a lot of housing in a really short amount of time. Is this feasible?
Well, the governor says that this bond measure combined with private financing could create approximately 18,000 multifamily rental housing units in the next 6 years, including 5,000 units during the next budget cycle. And it's a good question about feasibility, especially given workforce shortages in all sectors, including construction. Also considering inflation driving up costs. You know, your money buys you less. Plus, there are all manner of land use and zoning laws that could present hurdles to something like this. But frankly, one of the biggest hurdles to doing more faster to address the state's housing crisis has been a lack of money. And this is one way to get a bunch more money flowing towards addressing the problem.
What's your sense of how legislators feel about this and whether they're willing to pass this and then send it to voters?
I would say it's too early to know. On the one hand, there is precedent for this. The Secretary of State's office actually has a nice history on voter-approved bond measures, which, as I've said, used to be kind of a thing here and haven't been in recent decades. Just one kind of interesting historical footnote. 1972, under Governor Dan Evans, the legislature placed a record 6 bond measures.
Oh, hey.
5 of the 6 were approved, and that included spending for community colleges, waste disposal facilities, water supply projects. It was a big infrastructure building time back then too. So, you know, on one hand, lawmakers could view this as an elegant solution, but I will say that increasing the state's debt without a funding mechanism is something that will make a lot of lawmakers think twice. The state has a great bond rating. The governor doesn't think this would hurt that rating, but Washington already has a pretty high debt load. One person I think will be really an important voice in this debate, Libby, is the state treasurer, Ike Pelliciotti, whose job it is to look out for a state's debt health and the bond ratings.
Of course, there's a nationwide housing shortage. Is Washington the only state prioritizing this issue?
Certainly not. I have talked to lawmakers across the country in recent weeks who have all raised this as an issue. And it's not just West Coast states or large states. It's Idaho and Montana, where there's been a huge influx of people moving in. It's East Coast and Midwest states. Everyone seems to be grappling with this. Our neighbors to the south, Oregon, legislative leaders there have said housing is a top priority for 2023. Here in Washington, the numbers are staggering. The governor's office says the state will need 1 million more homes by 2044, which pencils out to about 46,000 new homes every year for the next 22 years. The majority of those million homes will have to be affordable or accessible to low-income families. This sets up a much more complicated conversation about the role of the private sector and where and how we build homes, multifamily housing going forward, building codes, the cost of building. You know, it's not getting cheaper to build a house, it's getting more expensive. So how do you solve for this? This is not going to be easy.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressures there. I want to move on to gun control. Governor Jay Inslee and Attorney General Bob Ferguson have both signaled that they want to take action on guns. What measures are they pushing?
There are three big changes that the governor and attorney general are pushing. A ban on so-called assault weapons, a requirement that you have a license or a permit to purchase a firearm, and with that comes some training requirements, and possibly allowing liability lawsuits for negligence against gun manufacturers. These proposals build upon several years' worth of what advocates call gun safety measures, like a ban on high-capacity magazines, red flag laws, mandatory background checks for all gun sales. Many of these changes have been approved by voters, but also some by lawmakers. And now heading into the 2023 session, again, it looks like there's going to be a big push to do something at the legislative level.
Why is the governor and the legislature looking at banning assault weapons now?
Well, it's something that the attorney general has been pushing for years, very unsuccessfully, and he'll admit that. Governor Inslee will proudly tell you that he lost a seat in Congress back in 1994 for voting for a federal assault weapons ban. So, you know, this is not new, but what is new is that the state's leading gun safety group, the Washington Alliance for Gun Responsibility, has for 2023 made this ban its top priority. This is a group that has been extremely strategic and worked very incrementally and has until now held off on pushing for an assault weapons ban. So to answer your question directly, why now? This tells me that the Alliance thinks that the current makeup of the legislature and the timing is right to get this through. And Ferguson has said as much in recent comments too. They think that the time has arrived.
Gun control is, of course, a pretty partisan issue. What are Republicans saying about these proposals?
As you might imagine, they don't like them and they will oppose them vociferously. I often say that about 80% of bills in the legislature pass with bipartisan support. That leaves 20% that are super partisan, and gun legislation fits into that camp. You know, anytime you're talking about restricting guns or gun rights, you're going to have a fight on your hands. And it's not just Republicans, it's gun owners, it's the NRA. They will pack legislative hearing rooms, they will hold rallies, they will bombard lawmakers with phone calls. But there's been a shift, Libby. I mean, for years covering the Washington legislature, lawmakers, Democrats, time and again would shy away from these issues, which is why the advocates traditionally would go to the ballot. Now, there is much more willingness by Democrats to take these issues on. One reason why, I think, is because in the old days, Democrats were trying to protect their rural members from taking, quote unquote, bad votes. Well, they don't have any rural members anymore. So this is the party of urban and suburban voters who are generally just fine with more restrictive gun laws. And so the legislature, rather than the ballot, has become the place to go to do this.
And is that because we're seeing a similar phenomenon that we see at the congressional level, for example, where districts are simply becoming safer for parties, and you're seeing these partisan shifts further to the left, further to the right? Is that phenomenon happening in Olympia as well, where you just see legislators in safer seats and they're able to kind of go all in for their priorities rather than having to worry about a contentious election?
Absolutely. The number of competitive seats is and has dwindled. As I mentioned, Democrats don't have, I mean, sometimes it was just a couple of members from rural parts of the state they were trying to protect, even if they potentially had the votes to do some of this stuff at the time. They didn't want to put their rural members in a tough spot. I also think the conversation on this particular topic of gun safety has just shifted. The polling is good for the backers of this. The votes that have been taken so far have not come back to haunt Democrats. Really, the biggest challenge, I think, going forward is in the courthouse, because the U.S. Supreme Court right now is making it easier to challenge gun control laws. And so anything, and heretofore, assault weapon bans have been upheld, but pretty much anything the Democrats do has the potential, if not the likelihood, of being challenged in court. And so I think that that's where maybe the fight is going to shift to.
Turning the page on a criminal justice issue here, lawmakers will also need to implement a new drug possession law before July of this year. And this stems from a Washington Supreme Court case, State versus Blake. Remind us, Austin, what was that case and how did lawmakers respond to it?
This was the case that struck down the state's felony drug possession law as unconstitutional, because you could be convicted of possession even if the prosecution did not prove that you knowingly and intentionally possessed the drugs. This involved the case of Shannon Blake, who argued that she did not know about a baggie of drugs that was in a pair of jeans. She said that she had gotten from a friend. Democrats responded to the law being thrown out by putting in place a temporary fix that made drug possession a misdemeanor, not a felony, and emphasized people getting into treatment instead of sending them to jail. Specifically, the law says that before someone can be charged with a crime, they must be diverted to services at least twice. But as you note, this was a temporary fix and it's expiring. And so coming into 2023, the legislature will be looking for a more permanent solution.
And how are lawmakers thinking about the replacement of felony drug convictions?
It really depends on who you ask. There's the camp that thinks the current approach with some tweaks is the way to go, so keeping it a misdemeanor and really emphasizing treatment. There are those who would advocate for decriminalizing personal amounts of drugs, as Oregon has done, and really shifting the focus to treating this as a public health crisis. And I'm sure you could find some Republicans who would like to return to a felony drug possession statute. I think it's safe to say that that last option is off the table in the democratically controlled legislature. This debate is really going to be over whether to go the Oregon route or stick with the current approach. And my sense is that the current approach is probably where things are headed, but there is a broad coalition of Democratic lawmakers and advocates who have backed what they call the Pathways to Recovery Act, which is a proposal that very much mirrors what Oregon did in 2020. You know, the big debate right now is it working in Oregon? That I think there are definitely Democrats here who are concerned there needs to be kind of a carrot and a stick, a forcing mechanism to get people into treatment. But here's the thing, no matter what they do, we don't have the drug treatment capacity in this state. Yeah. To treat everybody. We do not have on-demand treatment. We do not have treatment as many times as you need it. So no matter what they do, they have to also be thinking in parallel about building a much more robust substance use abuse treatment system.
Yeah. Before we go here, Austin, of course, Democrats are in the driver's seat, as we've discussed here. What are you hearing from members of the other party, the Republicans and their priorities?
They're in a tough spot. You know, they can look for ways to work with Democrats. They can offer up sort of an alternative view of what the budget and other priorities should be. You know, if we were in charge, here's what we would do. Or they can fight Democrats tooth and nail. And I think you'll probably see all three approaches depending on the topic. I mentioned earlier that there may be an opportunity to expand the working families tax credit on a bipartisan basis. I can assure you that Republicans will think Democrats are spending too much in the budget, and that's sending enough back to taxpayers. The fights over gun issues will be epic if they make it to the floors of the House and the Senate. Generally, Republicans will be advocating for more of a private sector solution to a lot of these big issues we've been talking about, the housing crisis, for instance. You know, they'll be saying reduce barriers to building new homes. They will oppose efforts to decriminalize drug possession. And undoubtedly, they'll be pushing some bills that are sort of in the law and order category and sort of pro-police. Washington is lucky, I would say, and the Democrats and Republicans still have a fairly good working relationship, but there are always tensions. And while they may agree on what many of the pressing issues are, they often do not agree on the solution.
Austin Jenkins is a staff reporter at Pluribus News and hosts Inside Olympia on TVW. Thanks so much for stopping by.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime right here online at KUOW.org, or of course on your favorite podcast app.